Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you on this Tuesday, the 16th of August. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up from Zambia, the results of Thursday's presidential elections.
Lobo Edika C, PF, 1,860,877. HMA Hakainde, UPND, 1,760,347.
So, President Lungu wins, but the opposition UPND says it rejects the result. Civil society groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo say that the number of people hacked to death in Nord Kivu province over the weekend has risen to 51. We'll be hearing from this analyst.
I think this really highlights the continued situation of insecurity in the province. It really shows Kabila's government's inability to bring security to this part of the country. And this is a place where people are fed up with the government's inability to protect them.
Just two of our stories ahead on this edition of Africa Link. Stay tuned.
Top story.
We begin in Zambia, where the results have been announced in tightly contested presidential elections.
Lungu Edika C, PF, 1,860,877. HMA Hakainde, UPND, 1,760,347.
So, President Edgar Lungu has been re-elected by just over 50%, which means there will be no runoff. Lungu defeated his nearest rival, Hakainde Hichilema, from the UPND, the United Party of National Development. He polled just over 47%. However, the UPND has said it rejects the result. Our correspondent in Lusaka, Kathy Sikombe, has been telling me why.
They are saying that the elections have been stolen from them. This is because there were some problems at the polling stations, and the UPND has been saying that the results that were given to the National Results Center were not verified, according to them.
Is the opposition going to contest the results in court?
Yes, they have already hinted that they are going to petition the elections because they believe that they won and that they gave the Electoral Commission of Zambia several opportunities to deal with the issues and investigate, but nothing came out of that.
How have Zambian voters been responding? Do they think the Electoral Commission colluded to rig the vote, as the opposition suggests?
There are two sides, Mark. The ones that are supporting the PF, they think that they have won outrightly and that they deserve to win. They deserve a second term in office because, according to them, they have not finished what the PF started. And then on the other side, with the UPND supporters, they strongly feel that they worked hard. They put up a very good campaign. They felt that they offered the best for Zambians in terms of issue-based campaigns. So they feel cheated, they're angry. I think most of the times that we were at the results center, we heard that the UPND camp was actually very unhappy about this and they were planning to protest. It's just that security has been very, very tight the past few days. A lot of police officers like never seen before.
How worried are people in Zambia by the way this election is turning out?
They are worried because this election is bringing a lot of division. They voted very well in the beginning, as you may have heard. The turnout was very, very good. But then there's been an intolerance, especially on the part of the PF, where they do not want to see others have different beliefs from them. And so this is dividing the Zambians further, and they want everybody to believe in what they want to believe. So it's causing some problems, really, and I know some families are not even talking to each other because they are in two different camps.
Kathy Sikombe, and this was indeed a tightly contested race. There was a worrying level of violence during campaigning, but polling day itself passed off peacefully. So how has Zambian society emerged from this poll? Daniel Peltz put that question to Lee Habasonda, head of the Zambian chapter of Transparency International.
What comes out of this election really is the fact that it does divide Zambia along ethnic and regional support bases. And the president will have to work at reintegrating Zambia into one nation, because the voting patterns indicate that half of the country really is not with him, and therefore he really needs to put mechanisms to ensure that the country is united behind him. Particularly, my view is that he should be looking at the electoral system to ensure that it does reflect those people that have lost an election. But having said that, I do believe that the opposition will be in the Constitutional Court to contest this election. So we will be interested to see what happens, whether or not they have sufficient evidence to prove that this election was stolen from them.
Do you think that the opposition has a point when it claims that there has been a rigging in these elections?
There hasn't been even playing field. The media was dominated by the ruling party. The police services or the police force was only protecting more of members who were associated with the ruling party. So I think the extent that we look at structural factors, the opposition may have a point.
Do you see any danger of post-election violence?
Yes, indeed. Right now, within Lusaka, I think there are pockets of celebrations celebrating the victory of the ruling party. But I do think the opposition are still meeting, trying to plot the way forward. But the threat of violence lingers around, because the opposition have not yet stated their position. But clearly it also depends on how magnanimous the ruling party will be. If they go on an orgy of retribution, then we may see clashes within the city and along the line of rail, which may be difficult to contain. Particularly, as I have said, that the police is using heavy-handedness, particularly on the opposition opponent.
What would you advise the president to do now to try and defuse the tensions and also unite the country, which, as you said, is split in?
I think he requires to be magnanimous. He needs to reach out to those people that have been defeated, and he should be able to understand that in an election, there will be those people that will reject you and those that will support you. So he really needs to sort of close the divide that this election has created.
Lee Habasonda, head of the Zambian chapter of Transparency International.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Civil society groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo are saying that the number of people hacked to death in the city of Beni in Nord Kivu province over the weekend has risen to 51. The area has been badly hit by violence over the past 2 years, suffering a series of massacres, which the government of the DRC and MONUSCO, the UN mission in the country, blame on the ADF, a partly Islamist group of Ugandan origin. The government has declared 3 days of national mourning, and President Joseph Kabila is visiting the area. Phil Clark is a lecturer in international politics at SOAS at the University of London. I asked him if Kabila's visit was a sign that he is now showing more interest in the region, or was this just electioneering ahead of a poll which is supposed to take place later this year?
There's an enormous amount of anger in this part of North Kivu towards Kabila's government. And in fact, Kabila had visited the town of Beni only 3 days before this massacre. So I think this really highlights the continued situation of insecurity in the province. It really shows Kabila's government's inability to bring security to this part of the country. And this is a place where people are fed up with the government's inability to protect them.
Why is it that the people of Beni can't be protected?
One of the big problems in this part of Congo is the Congolese military. They've been responsible for enormous massacres against the civilian population. And there's even an accusation by some local actors that perhaps the army collaborated with the ADF rebels in carrying out this massacre over the weekend. So the government, in fact, is more part of the problem than the solution. The second issue here is also that the United Nations continues to fail to protect local civilians. The UN has a beefed-up mandate to tackle specifically the ADF rebel group, that the UN seems completely unable to do so. And so the UN's failure is also a big part of this problem.
What are the ADF's aims and objectives?
The ADF is a very shadowy rebel group. It's existed in North and South Kivu provinces for more than 20 years now. It's originally from Uganda. It once had pretensions to marching on Kampala and taking over all of Uganda. It's also assumed to have some degree of Islamist or even jihadist underpinnings, although I tend to think that that's slightly exaggerated. So it's one of many rebel groups operating in eastern Congo whose motivations, I think, have become very tangled and very complicated over time. But what we do know is that one of their key tactics is to target the local population for increased control. It's everyday Congolese who tend to be the main victims of ADF violence.
The opposition in the DRC says Kabila wants to postpone elections, which are due later this year, so he can stay in power beyond his mandate, which ends in December. Now, how is the unrest in the east of the country affecting the struggle between the government and the opposition?
This is the bigger context to the massacre in Beni. It's the ongoing controversy over Kabila's attempts to try and delay the elections, which were supposed to be held at the end of this year. I think what this highlights is really two things. One is that Kabila has always lost control of the eastern provinces and really cannot bring peace and security to that part of the country. But the current situation also highlights Kabila's desire to cling on to power, come what may, that he is continually cracking down against the political opposition. This includes a crackdown against Moise Katumbi, Kabila's main political opponent. Kabila is using all of the levers of power at the moment to try and delay the elections to ensure that he can rig them completely and come back to power for a third term. So the political situation in Congo is extremely volatile, and the massacre in Beni over the weekend simply highlights that even further.
Phil Clark, lecturer in international politics at SOAS at the University of London.
Making a difference.
And in Making a Difference this week, we hear about an enterprising civil servant in Cameroon who is helping to lift two villages out of poverty. His scheme revolves around the breeding of livestock and is known simply as a One Man, One Pig program. The results are encouraging, as Maki Kinseko reports.
48-year-old Taka Juliana cleans one of her 48 pigs fenced in behind her house in Bay Village. She says she and her husband were given a couple of pigs 7 years ago to raise and be able to take care of their family.
The pig we ibigiwi, runs with plants in there.
First, we received a couple, but the male died. So I took another male from my neighbor and kept the female. They gave me 12 piglets. One of the pigs again gave me 12 piglets, and shortly after that, I had 12 new piglets again. My life has changed in a big and positive way, so I say thanks.
I get big change for my life, so I thank.
Ten kilometers from Taka Juliana's house is a pork market. 4 years ago, it had five sellers at most. Today, about 100 young men buy pigs from the village, slaughter them and sell the meat at this market. 22-year-old Harin Kenfak is one of the hawkers at the market. He left his village, Santa, about 20 kilometers away and says he expects to raise money from the pork business and continue his studies at the nearby University of Bamenda.
People like pork because the meat is good. That is why I sell an average of 10 kilos every day.
This one-man, one-pig program was initiated by Fru Jonathan, a son of the village. He says he saw how his parents suffered to send him to school. Many of his peers then could not go to school because their parents could not afford the fees. Fru Jonathan, whose parents raised pigs to finance his education, then decided to give at least 100 pigs each year to his village and some neighboring ones. The initiative was launched 8 years ago.
And it's so important for us because income-generating project. We should teach the people how to fish rather than give them fish. And this is just what we're doing. There are many children who have obtained their diplomas in high school, in university, thanks to this project. And that's why we continue to carry it out in the villages of Santa so that it can help the people reduce poverty, help them educate their children, help them to treat themselves in hospital and so on.
The income from raising and selling pigs enabled many parents to send their children to school. Teacher Grace Mofo of the Government Primary School of Bafuchu says the number of enrollments has risen significantly.
Just look around you. You see, all the classrooms are full. A couple of years back, there were barely 100 students in our classrooms because most of their parents were not able to keep paying their school fees. They started rearing and selling pigs, and now they are capable of paying their children's school fees and buying their books as well as providing their school needs.
The villages are becoming leading producers of pigs in Cameroon, with most of the meat sold to Cameroon's major cities.
Marky Kinseka reporting. In Nigeria, parents of the kidnapped Chibok schoolgirls are demanding that President Muhammadu Buhari secure the return of their children by ordering the release of Boko Haram militants detained by the Nigerian authorities. The call follows the appearance of a new Boko Haram video at the weekend. Our correspondent in northeastern Nigeria, Muhammad Al-Amin, takes up the story.
A video released on Sunday by the Abubakar Shekau faction of Boko Haram terror organization shows some of the abducted Chibok girls asking for the release of captured militants in return for their own freedom. This is the latest video from embattled Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau, who earlier this month denied claims that he had been replaced at the head of the jihadist group. Some parents and community leaders in Chibok, who confirmed that those in the latest video where their children demanded that the federal government swerve detain Boko Haram members for the girls who have been in captivity for over 2 years. Women rights activist Aisha Siddiqui expressed the hope that the girls will soon be released now that Boko Haram has opened the door to dialogue.
If this video confirmed that those children are those Chibok girls, we are praying and hoping that they will come back to their communities. Before, we don't have any hope, but for now, some girls have been released, and now this video, there is hope. And I know the government and the military will do something to get back the girls.
Ibrahim Muhammad Kado, a resident of Gombe in northeastern Nigeria, called on Boko Haram to consider the amnesty offered by the federal government to take members who surrendered or are captured.
My call or an appeal is to the Boko Haram members. They should consider what the federal government is doing presently for rehabilitating their members so that they can release the Chibok girls. What the federal government is doing is to assist their members for them to regain their good behaviors and attitude. So I'm appealing to members of the Boko Haram to release those girls for them to come back to their parents.
According to analyst Daniel Nyamgwash from northern Nigeria, swapping Boko Haram terrorists for the girls present a dilemma to the government.
This is a very critical matter that requires deep analysis. It will be very, very difficult for government to meet that demand.
This is the third video showing that many of the Chibok girls are alive. Experts believe that This latest video is a sign of desperation by the Boko Haram, especially the side of Abubakar Shekau, which is keeping the girls as both a bargaining chip and human shield.
Mohammed Al-Amin reporting from northeastern Nigeria.
Africa on the move.
Lagos, the commercial capital of Nigeria, is notorious for its traffic jams. During the rush hour, commuters can spend 4 hours getting to work and another 4 getting back home again. One way of beating the traffic is to take a taxi, a water taxi. Sam Olukoya reports.
This is a typical traffic jam in Lagos. Vehicular movement has come to a standstill and the resultant gridlock in many lanes stretches for miles. This is how millions of people in Lagos commute to and from work on a daily basis. To beat the rush hour traffic, many people like Lagos resident Adekunbi Adeko leave for work very early in the morning and return home late at night.
Yes, for me to leave early, I have to wake up by 4:30, and getting home by 9:30, 10 o'clock means I don't even get to sleep until 10:30 or probably some minutes before 11, and I have to be up again by 4:30.
As a coastal city, lagoons and other waterways make up 17% of Lagos. Water taxis plying the waterways are getting increasingly popular because they make movement in some parts of the city much faster than road transport. I boarded a boat taking passengers from the Lagos Island to Ikorodu at the outskirts of the city. A passenger, Jacob Lucky, says he prefers commuting by water taxis to and from his workplace because it saves time.
For me as a person, the advantage is that it's faster compared to road. If I leave the island by 6, it'll take me about 4 hours to get home. I'll get home by 10. But if I'm to go by boat, 7, I'm already home. So yeah, it's very okay.
Metro.
At the Lagos jetty, water taxi operators call out to potential customers by shouting out their destinations. Abisola Kemsin, managing director of the Lagos State Waterways Authority, says within the last 10 years, the number of water passengers has grown from 200,000 to 2.2 million monthly. The number is expected to rise in the coming years.
With the additional provision of infrastructure on the waterways as part of our waterways development master plan, we anticipate that that number is going to grow by over 300% within the next 3 years.
Traveling by water taxis, however, comes at a cost, a higher cost than traveling by road. And for some commuters, it's simply too expensive.
The cost is out of this world. That is what scares majority away. Government need to do something. They need to subsidize water transportation. Maybe they should bring their own boats.
The Lagos State government says cost of water transportation will soon drop as it plans to introduce several ferries to complement the services of private operators.
Sam Olukoya reporting. And now, before we leave you, a reminder of our main stories. In Zambia, President Edgar Lungu of the Patriotic Front has been declared the winner of last Thursday's election, but the opposition UPND has rejected the result. Civil society groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo are saying that the number of people hacked to death in the east of the country over the weekend has risen to 51. The army has blamed the attack on the ADF militant group. In Nigeria, parents of the kidnapped Chibok schoolgirls are demanding that President Muhammadu Buhari secure the return of their children by ordering the release of Boko Haram militants detained by the Nigerian authorities. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Please remember, we welcome your comments on this programme, either in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, an SMS to 49160957595510, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Do join us again tomorrow. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.